with its predictable range of practical, functional goods, and very, very few luxury items. Brands of soap and shampoo do seem to have worked their way through into this little part of the world. The range of food on offer, meat, vegetables, is quite limited in variety. The tea shops have that great range of pastries and horrible sweetened tea or coffee, over sweetened, but it does taste worse without sugar. Maybe it's just the milk. In fact, that's it. Then there is the wonderful stagecoaches. Smaller versions of the great American stagecoaches. Well, working on the TV programs, that is. Miniature stagecoaches pulled by a single smallish horse rattle away up and down the main street in town. An interesting part of the world. I've never seen this kind of transport. I've not seen anywhere else. Okay, now we're back to Mandalay with its familiar sights and sounds. And eateries, particularly the memory restaurant again. It is certainly one of the better places, despite its limited menu, but compensated for all great food. I now have less than 2 weeks in Burma. 1 week in Thailand. I head back to Ireland. I'm sad. It's the thought of the end. But then, delighted, and even perhaps elated, very strong word, elated that the experience has passed. I'm now in the ninth month of joyful experiences of people, life, of ordinary travel with ordinary folk, who delight in ordinary conversation, which is never boring. Well, it is boring at times. To be honest, it could be repetitious, but it never. Great fun. Okay. In Lay Lake, be wary of guidebooks who describe a place. This place, and this place, is described as outrageously picturesque. Well, it tends to build up the expectations somewhat, and reality is slightly different. I certainly don't think it is as impressive as Lake Toba in Sumatra. Arriving, in fact, at the Inlay Inn, a quick walk around town in the light rain, yes. It did begin to rain quite a bit in Inlay. Revealed a town built on flattish ground with no lake. Subsequently, by motorboat, it was a while, perhaps even 10 minutes, before we hit the glass-like flat lake which stretches and stretches between the small mountains of the area. A very pleasant spell, which sped too quickly. An afternoon canoe trip on the local waterways was too short. Just watching the locals about their activities. Lots of washing, clothes, bodies, etc. The gentle pace of it all. Stopping off at the inevitable pagodas and monasteries, and also a friend's house, with its Spartan, simple, functional nature. The people, as always, friendly and hospitable. Next day, we headed to the busy market town of Tunji, with its multicultural array of churches, or is it multi-religious? Sikhs, Chinese pagodas, Hindus, Islam, and various Christian churches. And that's what you see on the main road. The market is very busy, well stocked, and with much trade apparent. The walk back down, well, this was a hill town, of course, Tunji, offered spectacular views out across the valley, with the lake in one corner, to the left as you walk down, a sprinkling of shower clouds crossing the valley, with its water-laden rice fields and a scattering of buildings. Then there was also the inevitable market. Market day in a nearby village with no streets, kind of a different village. Everything is conducted on boats. At least one quarter of the boats are filled with tourists. Does take away a bit of the impact. The further quarter are filled with people selling things to tourists. One of the great little joys was in finding the House of the Four Sisters, or La Maison de Quatre Sœurs, in practice my French, poor French, situated alongside a canal heading out of town. They, the four girls, organized a canoe trip through the quiet waterways and invited I to their family home for two dinners on separate night settings. A simple tourist service of the non-state type, even though Save on Hotel itself was very pleasant, with lots of smiling faces. I wonder how these four girls under the gentle supervision of their parents will progress with their little services. And then, let us not forget the curious way by which the boats are paddled. One foot is wrapped around the oar, whilst the oarsman balances standing upright on the second foot. The oar is moved forward in the water in a sideways motion, then straightened and pulled, pushed back. It gives the opportunity to view the water for obstacles such as reeds, which are collected and formed to form floating gardens for tomatoes and other crops anchored to the bed of the lake. On a wet morning, it was westwards to Kolob and its hill tribe. Stopping at the main tourist halt by 11, I was told in conversation that the town people were crazy. It couldn't be the weather. Later on, I safely ran into a few of the heavy drinking set in a restaurant. They were crazy. I think it is the weather. Following morning, about 7, the rain had mainly cleared, and I and the guide headed off in the direction of the first of two hill villages, the Pa'o, subsequently the Pa'on. A 1.5 hour muddy path took us to a poor village. Sure enough, it was on top of the hill. A longhouse was the exception to the timber and corrugated housing in terms of style. It contained four families, partly separated with partitions, in a smoky environment, with each family having its own fire. Dark and smoky it was. It also seemed to have no authority structure within the village, other than for the fact that all the authority seemed to rest in the head monk. A lack of pathways, walkways, also distinguished the longhouse from the style of those in Borneo. One of the three main crops, the others being tea and coffee, is the growing of cheroots. They are gathered, dried upon a brick structure, indented like small frying pans, recesses for the leaves, and then covered with weights, a blanket, and then the weight on top. And the heat from the brick structure causes the leaves to dry. These are then packed into big bamboo baskets and taken off to the local factory. It is said that 5 days' work by three people in this manner can result in produce which they can sell for about $20 equivalent. Not a great return considering the effort, but on to the next village, which was smaller and with one family per house, slightly different. The farming activities are the same, but the women have their own distinctive dress, black-edged, with a solitary pinstripe. The language is completely different. We enter several words in order to prove this, all within 1.5 hours walking distance. Indeed, only two of the various hill tribes which straggle and inhabit the area. The soil looks rich, but the methods are primitive on these hilly slopes. No rice terraces, surprisingly, supposedly by custom, or any other sort of terraced farming. Just simple, old-fashioned subsistence farming. Wednesday. It looked deceptively easy on the map in terms of distance, even allowing for local conditions. But as I write this, the rain pours down, and I am still about 1.5 hours travel time from Bagan, in a quiet, nondescript village near one of Burma's few dormant volcanoes. Yes. Waiting for a promised lift, me, not the volcano. The day has been vaporized into a pleasant series of memories. After the wait for transport in Cologne, that was the starting point. We headed off down the road with a beautiful series of views. Of course, I was on top of the vehicle again as we wound our way down out of the mountains. Heavily vegetated hills everywhere, densely covered with a wide variety of medium height trees and shrubs, so as to leave no growing space. Or so it seemed. Little farming seemed to take place along the way. The best view was in fact the last one, as we, well, I, looked back into the mountain range, and the point, a narrow valley, where our journey had started, and now partly finished. Then the flatlands and the heat now returned. The views from the top of the bus were now far less pretty and more boring, but dry, dusty shrubland with little of note. The first change of vehicles was at Metiko. I don't think I can even pronounce that later. I couldn't certainly pronounce when I was there. Metiko, but with a forceful argument with the money collector, I paid a bit over the going rate. I saved for luggage, but he refused to. He refused to budge. I thought that I was wrong at first. How silly. The prices they were asking were quite extortionate by local standards. Still, stay good-natured and keep laughing. Eventually, some common sense would prevail. Just stubborn enough to hand over the money. I think everybody thinks that tourists are just walking cash-dispensing machines. The next part of the journey was definitely long, but little overtook us. We averaged about 20 miles per hour, with few stops, and by 4, I was here in this place, patiently waiting for a bus at 6, with a big question mark on the lift. I wouldn't mind staying here the night, although there seems to be an absence of accommodation. Maybe I could penetrate the kitchen for a few surprises. Began, yes. The mystery ended with a taxi trip through to Began itself. Search for accommodation settled at what for me is a travel record of $36 per night for a relatively nondescript chalet. We hung one of the foreign curtains and thanked fortune for being tall enough to reach the air conditioning unit high on the wall, which seemed to be stuck on maximum cold. The staff were friendly and courteous. The plumbing, arcade by any standards. It required a bit of DIY to get the loo to work. And a miracle for the hot water to work. Fortunately, the weather's warm. The miracle maker was probably busy with all the other rooms at the time. Still, there was a comfy bed, white sheets, clean, fresh, crisp. Moved the following morning at 8 a.m. before embarking on a walking tour of the nearby showpieces. The night earlier, they had revealed themselves by being slightly lit, or slightly silhouetted against the night sky, but everywhere there is something, either in room, or lovingly maintained, or in one particular case, somewhere in between, with its steps brushed at least in the middle, and less visited. There are so many places to see, to look at, and to visit. We'll return to this aspect. But the highlight of the day was a really great massage from an elderly guy and partly by his wife. It was painful, a little bit painful, but I could feel that things were being put right, the spinal column being put back into its place. Hired a pony driver and cart for the next 2 days of early morning starts, midday rest, and afternoon trips, thereby avoiding the heat of the day. Taking the road south on the first day, via Minkaba to New Bagan, there were a number of, to say the least, non-typical places. In particular, the Manuha Temple, named after the king, brought here as a prisoner because he would not share a bit of knowledge. So, with a bit of humor, or at least in my opinion, he had a temple built with 3 seating and 1 reclining Buddha, all very cramped. There was, and is still, a minimum of space to walk around these large Buddha images. And as if to confuse the issue, the central standing Buddha has a mournful face from below, as you quick bend your neck backwards to look upwards, but then a happy smiling face from viewed from eye level. Next to the hotel, the cheaper hotel which I moved into, is the large, impressive Godapalan. And then there is the rest, the solid-built temples imposing boldly, built but only the hint of their formal evidence remaining, represented in their faded frescoes. When quiet of noisy tourists, they have a magic air of their own. It is very serene and peaceful. If there is a guiding rule, it is not to rush through so many temples in a few hours, but rather to get to the place early in the day or late in the evening. And then, as you can get to the top of most of them, just admire the view, the peace and quiet. This is a place where the art of meditation is at home, I think. On the afternoon of the third day here, we went back to some of the old places which I visited, their character stronger, the time longer, just to look and to stare, to walk around and to be observed by the smell, the silent sounds, the simultaneous warmth and coldness blended as of one. What an end to a great experience, or perhaps to something start of something newer and better. I hope so. Of the four sunsets I witnessed from the balcony of the Tiritfitzeya, say that one again, Tiritfitzeya, from its poorly stocked bar and its US dollar prices, although it does have good or at least reasonable cold beer, and a range of the extortionate dollar price miniatures. Anyway, it was the last day. There were at least clouds around, just a scattering as the sun declined behind the river, the Ayarawadi. This day that was passed was spent in the long journey to Mandalay. It made the most sense to get back onto the main road in Mandalay rather than try to work my way down towards Yangon by what was reported to be flooded roads. In the local crowded tram bus, we slowly headed east and north. We overtook little except the buffalo cars. I think maybe a few of them could have overtaken us. Along the way, at least for the second half, the mountains lay to the east, as they should, but much of the land seemed to contain a chaotic organization of agriculture, fields of all shapes and sizes, often not cleared of earlier trees, etc. Crops of varying heights within the field, as if suggesting something not right. One of the last tickets on the bus south from Mandalay. Yes, fortunate enough. Back in Mandalay itself, and returning to the old homes, the food, back to the Marine Men restaurant again. I've not mentioned any other restaurants so frequently as this one. The same hotel, now extended to allow for even more tourists, slightly more expensive rooms as well. I wonder when I will actually visit this place again, and if so, in what way I will find it. The day I spent killing time, really, before taking the Rainbow Express out, from 6 p.m. until 11 a.m. the following day, makes for a long journey, with the frequently seen videos, Terminator 72, I think I'm memorizing the script for that particular one. Night falling quickly, the odd stop, the poor infrequency, the odd rainfall, slowly dawn breaking to reveal the flooded fields and the real reason for the raised houses and roads. The cattle, in one case, stranded atop a man-made size hill, treading the crowded mini field muddy carefully. Stranded. Back in rundown Yangon, with its own rundown feeling. A visit to the great Shwe Dagon, pagoda atop one of the few hills. The views from the top are occluded for large, all intents and purposes, by well upon the trees. But then there's this thing, large, bold, impressive, also domineering amidst its minions of multi-shaped reins, design, mini-shrines, bounding everywhere. A building frenzy, fed orgy of visual splendor. Even in the cloudy sky and soon to rain-filled, it stands alone, or like a large, powerful bell in a large, otherwise dark room. I'm just trying to create the images. A couple of walks around. One is certainly not enough, because you miss so much. No matter how slowly you walk, you're always on a 360-degree angle, 360-degree view of everything. Departure bound, with much paperwork at the airport. Luggage reproducing as I watch it. The old weighing scale saying 25 kilos. 25 kilos plus what I was carrying in my hand. I reckon I was now up to 30 kilos again. And so comes to the end of Burma. A short trip back in Thailand to spend a few days doing next to nothing. And that brings to an end the trip. Maybe I should finish something momentous, so I think I shall leave momentous saying so for later.